This episode of the Pain Education Corner is sponsored by the Camella Foundation. The Camella Foundation is committed to relieving pain naturally using osteopathic healing principles. Here at the Camella Foundation, we envision a world where people achieve their maximum potential by being empowered with knowledge and skills to heal themselves and others. This information is to be used for educational purposes only, and not to be construed as medical advice. If you have any questions or concerns, please consult a licensed healthcare professional. Hello, it's Bill, the Knee Pain Guru, and welcome to the Pain Education Podcast brought to you by the Camella Foundation. We have a special guest today. His name is Dr. Peter Schwantz, and he's a good friend of mine. We go back quite a ways, back to Louisville, Kentucky days. Reached out to him recently just to reconnect and asked him to be on the show. And well, here we are. So welcome, Peter.
Hey, Bill. Thanks, man. It's good to see you. And thanks for having me. Thanks for the invitation.
Awesome. Would you introduce yourself in terms of like your experience, your background, like what brought you to this point?
Sure. So I am a naturopathic physician. I attended a four-year naturopathic medical school in Arizona. It's not a mail order school. It was actual in-person. We've taken clinical boards, the basic sciences. I worked with other physicians, saw, you know, hundreds if not thousands of patients while I was in school. And the training of a naturopath is as a primary care physician. Now, unfortunately, not all 50 states yet license naturopaths. I'm still in Kentucky. Kentucky doesn't license naturopaths yet. So I work more in kind of the realm of health, coach, support. You know, the patients that I work with, I do want them to maintain relationships with primary care doctors, but most of them don't want to just go the pill and procedure route. They're looking for more comprehensive and holistic supports to transform their health. That's what I'm passionate about, and so that's what I'm doing here. And I, you know, I've been out of school since 2005. It's over 15 years now I've been doing this, and I feel really fortunate to support people this way.
Mm-hmm. Now, what's always interesting to me, the conversations I get in with the guests is, what brought you to become a naturopath? Like, there's always a nexus, like this place. It's like, well, it turned the corner. It's like, okay, I got to do that. So tell us a little bit, or share a little bit, bit about what life was like and what got you to go into the direction of being a naturopath.
I joke because my parents weren't hippies, and like I wasn't exposed to alternative types of medicine and supports as a child. You know, I'm fortunate. I'm intelligent, and I went to a great liberal arts school in Lexington, Kentucky, called Transylvania University, and I was a pre-med student there. And there were aspects of that were discouraging to me at the time. And, you know, I really enjoyed a lot of my fellow classmates, but I thought many of them seemed better suited to be scientists as opposed to healers. And at the same time, we were having the transition in the insurance industry to HMOs and PPO type programs. And, you know, there were conversations that doctors are only going to get 10 minutes with their patients, and patients may not get to pick the doctors they're working with. And so even before I had started into the medical route, I was feeling a little disenchanted with the direction medicine was going. So I was wondering if there was a different path. And I did AmeriCorps after I graduated, I discovered osteopathic medicine and thought maybe that was going to be a more holistic, like a better fit for me. And I did AmeriCorps after I graduated, and I was working with young homeless women, helping them get situated, and they had food stamps, and I would drive them to their doctor's appointments, and they would have children that were getting prescription after prescription for antibiotics, for ear infections and sinus infections. And during this time, I took a part-time job at a health food store. And so I was reading about nutrition and food sensitivities and how these impact children. And I had this internal question, like, who do I have to be to stop this pattern? Because I'm helping these young women, but their kids aren't getting helped by the doctors I'm taking them to. They're just prescribing more and more pills. And then I'm taking these young moms to the grocery store to spend their food stamps, and they're buying Doritos and Kool-Aid and hot dogs. And I started putting it together, and it was weird to me because the organization I was working for, we had a nutritionist on staff, and the nutritionist wasn't telling me that I should be helping these people figure out what they need to eat and what's going to help their kids. So I just kind of had this internal question, who do I need to be to stop these patterns, to break these patterns of disease and dysfunction, and truly help people transform their health? And within a 2-week period, it was a serendipitous moment. A magazine, a new issue came into the health food store, and it compared at the time the 3 naturopathic med schools in the U.S. And I read this 2-page article and was like, that's it. That's the kind of doctor I'm supposed to be.
You know, okay, so give me an idea. Transylvania University, you're pre-med. Did you complete that program?
Yeah. I graduated with a degree in biology and then a minor in philosophy. And in some ways, I think the philosophy degree is more important for me because it's the why that I think matters. You know, as a naturopathic physician, you know, in Arizona, we're fully licensed primary care physicians. We can do acupuncture. We can do it. You know, there's some naturopaths that do just Botox and aesthetic type stuff because it's a moneymaker. You know, we can do all kinds of IVs. We can do prescription medications. And I'm not opposed to prescription medications. I'm not opposed to pharmaceutical drugs. I'm not anti-vax. It's not what we use, but why we use it that I think matters. And there's a time and place for the pills, and there's a time and place for the procedures. But the problem is those things don't make people healthier. And we can look at the data. The more prescriptions you give to an individual, their health is declining. It's right. Clear. The more pills we're giving to people doesn't make people healthier. And the problem is today, you know, it's one thing if you're in your 60s or 70s and you're taking 6 to 10 prescription pills a day, but we have people now in their 30s, you know, some in their 20s that are requiring those kind of pharmaceutical supports, and they're not addressing the underlying issues. And I just think, you know, we need to be able to offer something better to people.
Agreed. Agreed. I know in my own personal experience, my big thing was my knee injury. That's right. How I got into all of this. And they gave me Percocet to like numb it so I could deal with post-surgery pain. And I'm taking Percocet, but Percocet's making me vomit.
Right.
I'm like, okay. So I tell the doctor about that. And they're like, well, they give me another prescription for the nausea.
Right.
And I was already feeling horrible from the pain and worse from the Percocet. And now they're going to have a third one or like a third dynamic in there that I was just like, it's much easier for me personally just to deal with the pain than to go down the layers of figuring out what was going on.
Right. And neither of those pills actually help your knee get stronger or recover.
No.
Right. They're Band-Aids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That sent me down a different path where I was looking at homeopathics and herbs and starting to tweak my diet in different ways that I was able to reduce the inflammation faster in my knee rather than just being medicated.
Right. And that's what made us connect and be like, oh, wow, here's a couple guys that kind of think alike.
Yeah. You know, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, well, the whole angle for today, we were going to chat about systemic inflammation.
Yeah.
And I believe it's tremendously overlooked in the understanding of physical pain in the body. Pick your joint, pick your body part, and how systemic inflammation is going to play a role in that. Could you begin speaking to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think inflammation is really underlying just in general the state of disease or dis-ease that most of us are in today. I mean, it's an underlying factor for all of chronic diseases, you know, inflammation and oxidative damage, and many of the habits and behaviors that people follow day in and day out are just feeding that. I mean, we're throwing wood onto this fire in our body. And you know, I tell patients, every patient, like, a goal for me is to help you get your inflammation in check, to lower, you know, oxidative damage in the body, to help the body recover. It's not often, right, causing acute issues, but it's that chronic accumulation over time that's sending us down the road, whatever our genetic predisposition may be. For some people, it's heart disease. Other people, it's cancers. Other people, it's autoimmune conditions. But inflammation is an underlying factor across the board. And absolutely, when we're more inflamed, we're going to have more pain. We're going to be more likely to have worse seasonal allergies. We're, you know, and then more predisposed towards those chronic diseases. So it's something that we have to talk about. But I also think, you know, it's not bad in and of itself. If we have an injury, we need some inflammation to help the body recover. If we get exposed to a virus or a bacteria, part of the immune response is creating inflammation. So, you know, there's a balance there. And I try really hard to not cast things in the good or bad categories. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, there's a balance we're looking for in our bodies, in our life. Here's an interesting piece, because I have my own experience with systemic inflammation, my own dance with it on a daily basis to watch it. It's like, oh, I gotta back off a little bit. So I've tweaking my diet, I've become aware of when I need to start incorporating some herbs or change my diet a little bit or drink more teas or things like that. But would you talk about how it shows up? Because for me, until I began to feel it in my own body, that it's like, oh, that's what inflammation feels like. Right. Oh, that's what happens when I cut out grains and dairy from my diet, that my body felt completely different, like flipping a switch on a light, right, on a light switch. Could you speak to what it feels like or what may show up in their body that they would not equate as systemic inflammation?
Absolutely. And first I want to just hit on what I think is often an overlooked factor contributing to it. And it's just like you talked about, it's dietary related. And there's two things that I think tend to happen. One is people eat really high glycemic stuff that causes a high blood sugar spike. The result is the body has to pump out a lot of insulin. Insulin tells the body to store what was eaten as fat, and it creates more inflammation.
Okay. Let's give examples, because I think there's a disconnect. Guys like you and I, doctors, they can talk the medical terms,
right?
But the average person that's listening to it, it's like, oh, high glycemic food. I don't eat that. Right. Nothing says glycemic on my package.
Right. Okay. The glycemic index is how quickly something in the body is converted to sugar.
Okay.
And the higher the glycemic index, the faster and the higher it's going to push up our blood sugar values, which then the body responds by putting out more insulin. And insulin is effectively telling the body we have an abundance of potential energy in the form of blood sugar now. We don't need it all now, so we'll store it in another energy form, fat, so we can use it later. The problem is none of us go into really starvation time, so we're not using these fat stores, and we continue to eat these higher glycemic foods. And really, grains, I think, are the big culprit that get overlooked. I mean, we know sweets and sugars and desserts and even sometimes fruit can cause blood sugar to spike. But then, you know, you look at a pack of pasta or something, it's not sweetened. It's just got naturally occurring sugars in there, high carbohydrate content. And so, like, you know, a breakfast of cereal and skim milk, right? You're getting a grain, you're getting the sugar from the lactose, you've taken the protein and the or the fat out of the dairy, the fat would have buffered some of that blood sugar response. Mm-hmm. So now, you know, the blood sugar goes higher. And that's why people start to, you know, often feel crashes when blood sugar goes down. And then the result of this excess inflammation, or the insulin, is more systemic inflammation. The other way that I think we're often doing this unknowingly is with food sensitivities. Right. So you talk about, oh, maybe I'm going to cut out gluten or cut out dairy. And the reason is, if we have a sensitivity to a food, what it means is it's triggering an immune response in the body. Our body is effectively treating the proteins. It's the proteins in the food that trigger immune responses. It's the proteins that on bacteria and viruses that trigger immune responses. So if we have a sensitivity to gluten, a protein in wheat, our body will effectively treat it like a foreign invader. And that's going to push inflammation up. So there are these, and that often might fly under the radar, because it's not like you eat the piece of bread now and 5 minutes later, you have all these outward signs of inflammation. Often this kind of inflammation is going to present either chronically. People are just always dealing with pain, always fighting, you know, high blood pressure, high cholesterol levels, all these other markers that are indicating they're inflamed, or it's flaring up their allergies, or they'll see it within, you know, 12 to 36 hours. It doesn't have to be instantaneous. So a lot of patients that I work with that have like autoimmune diseases, right, like lupus or RA or something like that, they, if they eat foods that we've discovered that are triggers for them, that they have a sensitivity to, it might cause a flare in their pain. So now, oh, you know, 12 hours later, my neck's aching more, I feel really stiff, my back hurts, more brain fog. So there's all these things that we wouldn't necessarily tie directly to the food and the way the food can raise inflammation. But then once we become aware of it, right, through experimentation, through comprehensive approaches, by cutting these foods out and then reintroducing them to see how they impact us, now we have some knowledge and we can make choices about this. And I tell my patients, I'm like, look, if you give up gluten, it doesn't mean you never, ever eat it again. Right. Mm-hmm. But if you understand how it impacts you, now you get to make a more informed decision going forward. And the tricky part for a lot of people is, if they want to know if gluten's an issue for them, you can't mostly give up gluten. You really got to try it all in 100%, you know, for a month or two. You just have to give your body a fair shot of functioning without it and then see how it does. So that's a big part of what I do just with every patient in my practice. You know, I tell them, I'm not going to try to get you to eat exactly how I eat, because I don't believe that would necessarily work for you. We need to figure out what's going to work for you in this way. And when we do that, now we're lowering your inflammation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My own experience was, the first experience of tweaking my diet was paleo. I removed the grains and the dairy. And I was absolutely shocked by how different I felt. Mm-hmm. And then it was, for me, it was like an elimination piece. And okay, I'd add this little bit of cheese here, and I'd add a little bit of, you know, this here and try this out. And I remember the thing that was so significant was the gluten piece. I've never gone to a doctor, never got anything officially diagnosed or any blood tests around it, but I would have even the littlest bit of gluten and it would feel like there was an alien in my belly. Like it was like, oh, that's awful. I feel horrible. And there would always be this feeling like after the eating pasta that I felt like the snake that just swallowed the big animal and has to lay for like 3 days while it digests. And I felt no energy and I felt lethargic and just really tired and my belly hurt and this and that. And it got to a point where there was no payoff in the food anymore. There was absolutely none. I started going in the direction of non-gluten options or gluten-free options, but there was just no option for me anymore for eating anything that had it in it. Yeah. And this was something that you can share it with somebody, you can talk about it, but until they feel the difference right. by giving that space and time in their diet where they turn off that white noise, it, what you're speaking to is so significant. Yeah. So significant.
Yeah. I was resistant for a long time, and I gave it up as I was finishing med school because I felt tired in the afternoons when I would eat sandwiches. And I was like, I got to pass my boards. I can't take a nap every afternoon. I'm going to try giving up gluten finally. And I felt so much better in 6 weeks. I lost like 10 pounds. My knee stopped hurting. You know, I had three knee surgeries in high school playing soccer, and I was all of a sudden at like 28, 29, like, oh, maybe I can start to run again because I felt that much better. And I didn't eat any gluten for a year. That's how much better I felt getting it out of my system.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been well over a decade since I've eaten any gluten. And at the beginning, you know, it wasn't like I flipped a switch and all of a sudden I didn't want anything with gluten. It was like, there's this interesting thing that your psychology plays. It's like, I wonder if I could get away with that muffin. It doesn't hurt. And I'd try it because I, previous life traveling in Europe, and they have these amazing bakery places, and it's like, I think I can get away with it. I think I can do it. I think I can do it this time. And after a period of time, it just got less and less further between trying those things. And eventually it's like, I'm good. I don't even get tempted anymore.
And now there's so many options, alternative things that are as tasty, you know, and we don't suffer the same way. So
thanks for tuning in to today's episode of the Pain Education Corner. If you have a special talent or skill to relieve pain and you'd like to become a guest on our show, visit us at thecamellafoundation.org/interview. Help us spread the word on eliminating pain and suffering in the world. That's thecamellafoundation.org/interview. Okay. Let's tie systemic inflammation in with the localized inflammation. Knee pain, hip pain, back pain, neck pain, shoulder pain, tennis elbow, name your diagnosis.
Right.
And now we have a specific issue in conjunction with systemic inflammation.
Yes.
Let's make that connection and how the reduction of systemic inflammation can support the localized issue that we're dealing with.
Yeah. No, it absolutely does. It's a huge factor. And, you know, a lot of joint issues, in my experience, they're either because of some kind of injury, right? Like there was some kind of initial trauma, and it's in whatever the initial healing cascade that started after the trauma, the swelling, the redness, you know, that will happen and try to help the joint recover. But our joints aren't really high priority in our body. Mm-hmm. So after the initial kind of, you know, approach there to try to fix things as much as they can, often the body goes back to digesting and eating and thinking and sleeping and growing and repairing in our organs and our vessels, these places that are more innervated. And what we're left with are joints that are, you know, misaligned. There's still trauma to these tendons and ligaments. They're not innervated with blood, so they're not really healing well. And it's causing that local pain, but that's not the pain of healing. It's just this discomfort. And that often then puts, you know, pressure, creates tightness in the muscles around the joint. And then we start to favor them and we limit what we do with them. And then that adds to the tightness. And so it's just this kind of vicious cycle. And I tell patients, I'm like, you know, as I'm getting older, the way I exercise and work out is so different. And, I just do a lot of stretching, a lot of mobility stuff, because that's what makes my joints feel better. And when I work with patients, I tell them, you know, I get it. You have a lot of chronic pain. We're going to try to start hitting it from the lifestyle peace first so that we can lower your total inflammatory burden so that things aren't quite hurting as much as they are. Then we can start focusing on the more, you know, exercise practices, recovery type things, stretching around the joints, strengthening the ligaments, getting things realigned. But for so many of these patients, it's been chronic. They've been hurting all the time. You kind of have to start just lowering the overall burden so that they can even then start to do the other therapies that they need. Because otherwise it's just painful and you know, you could do something temporary. Oh, we're going to put some ultrasound on it. Or, you know, I like this device called the Scanar. It's a Russian tool. It works great for pain and inflammation. But if you're not also addressing it systemically, it's very likely you're going to, you know, find yourself right back in the same situation just down the road.
Scanar.
Yeah, do you know Scanar?
S-C-E-N-A-R.
It's like a TENS unit. It stands for Self-Controlling Energy Neuroadaptive Regulator. And so it effectively is sending an impulse, like a TENS unit, yeah. But it reads from the body, like impedance and signal, and then it self-adjusts. So it's
on one of those before.
Yeah.
I got it in Asheville. I met somebody that had one.
Yeah.
And I didn't write down the name or get the person's business card. And that's exactly, it's like a biofeedback. So it changes as your body responds to that's fantastic. I'm really glad to know you.
Yeah, it's a great tool. And, you know, the difference is when you use like a TENS unit or an ultrasound, you're just repeating the same kind of signal or parameter that you set. And over time, the body gets acclimated. And so, you know, that's what's nice with this kind of tool is it's constantly self-adjusting and it's changing. And it can make a difference for that pain in the acute moment, and it can help chronically. But for me, it's a disservice if we're only doing that. We've got to look at the lifestyle pieces. We've got to lower the overall inflammation because, yeah, you may help your knee pain, but what good does that do if you have a heart attack in a year and a half? You know,
that's true. Yes. I'm really glad you shared the name of that machine. So that's something you do at your office?
You know, it's not a huge part of what I do because I tend to work with people more holistically, and the device, it's kind of not cost efficient for me to be applying that therapy. If I had somebody else working for me that I kind of trained in it and had them doing it, it would. What I actually do with patients who I think it'll be valuable is I let them take it home for a week or two, and I do kind of an in-office training for them on how to use it, and then they can use it for a week or two. And then to buy a home unit is like $700, $800. You know, they're not prohibitively expensive, and they're incredibly effective. So a lot of patients or families will buy one, especially if they've got kids playing sports, and you know, it's a great kind of tool.
I don't want to get too off topic, but
yeah,
this is kind of what happens when I talk to cool people who know cool stuff. Hold on a second here. Let's see. Okay. We had the Camella Foundation.
Right.
Nonprofit got a PEMF donated to it to us earlier this year, which I've been, we had one of the people who has been dealing with and working with the PEMF machine for an extended period of time. I'm learning about the machine. I'm curious as to how, if you know anything about the PEMF and how we can kind of compare apples to apples with it.
What is the PME? I'm not sure about what is there. Is that an abbreviation?
Pulse electromagnetic field. And it's based on Tesla technology, which is an evolution of the Rife machine.
Okay.
So it's more of a dynamic thing that raises the frequency of the mitochondria on the cellular level that helps the body detox and kind of tops off the battery, so to speak. That's how I understand it to be.
Mm-hmm.
I'm speaking out of turn beyond that. Like I couldn't explain much more than that. I know I feel super relaxed when I go on it. I feel more energized, feel different things at different points in time. But I'm curious as to how the Skaner, what you may.
I'm not sure. I feel like I've talked about that with someone. I've made a few Skaner YouTube videos. And so like every couple of months, I get contacted from somebody somewhere in the world who like wants to talk about it or ask some questions. I feel like I was talking to a chiropractor in Florida who was sharing something about this technology. You know, again, what I know with the Skaner device is it's like a TENS impulse. Mm-hmm. And how they described it in the training that I did with it is that it's creating a communication from the area you're treating back to the brain. And it's going to try to bring more attention to that area to facilitate healing. So, you know, for me, when I think about it, like for a joint, you know, I think about, well, what are some of the other things we try to do to bring attention to the joint for healing? You know, prolotherapy or PRP or stem cell injections. You know, my understanding again with those is they're bringing healing, creating more inflammation in the joint. So I've kind of figured that that's a big part of what the Skaner is doing. But they did say that it does also help to directly kind of buffer the nerve fiber pain. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you can get that immediate relief mm-hmm. in the moment when you're dealing with that acute pain. But as far as like, you know, I don't think of it as like an energetic, vibratory energy, which mm-hmm. is kind of what you describe sounds like to me, which I would then think, oh, that may be impacting people in a way that's similar to like acupuncture that's working on these meridians and these channels. And I think of that as a vibrational energy, or like classical homeopathy is a big part of what I do. You know, that's a vibratory, energetic type mm-hmm. medicine. There's synergy in all of these approaches in bringing them together to help people.
Sure. And this is the way my brain works. I want to see where one ends, like where the strength is of that modality or that machine or that practitioner or that doctor. And then where does another one pick up, because we are complex. The human body is a very, very complex machine.
Right.
And it's so interesting to see what would resonate with one person and work with one person doesn't necessarily work with another. So that gives me an idea for future guests on there. Yeah. I'd like to figure out more information. What I'd like to do is add those YouTube videos that you did on it. Okay. In the description below, as well as if there is a national, international body that does trainings and things like that.
There's one company, I think they're based out of Florida now, that, you know, they're the company that I send the patients to who want to order and purchase a device from, and they're who I purchased my device from. It's not the same company that was in the US the first time I discovered the Skaner tool. And you know, one of the things I've been told about it is because this is a Russian technology, it wasn't developed here. There isn't a lot of money to be made in the US using this. There's not a lot of, it's not utilized a lot. You know, there's so much more money from US companies marketing their TENS machine, their ultrasound, whatever their fancy lasers are. And, that might be unfortunate, especially if the Skaner's as or even more effective than a lot of these other more expensive tools. So that's a different kind of issue.
Yeah, that one of the things having, one big component that I studied in pulling my program together was Sistema, a Russian martial art. And what I found is the Russians, being that they were in an environment where they didn't have a lot of resources and they're very difficult situations that they were in, they made do with what they had.
Right.
So there wasn't a huge marketing component or a cost component in terms of getting it out to people. So I think when they get those types of technologies in the West, it's like, how do we make money with it?
Right.
So anyhow, yeah.
Well, and the legend has it that it was developed by their space program because they wanted a tool that was small, compact, and was versatile because in space, you know, you have to recycle waste material and water. So you don't want to be taking tons of pills if you're dealing with pain or inflammation or, you know, a sore throat or whatever else. And so that this was a tool they developed to send into space with their cosmonauts so that they could keep chemicals out of their water supply.
Yeah. There's a perfect example, a story about how NASA spent $1 million to create a pen to write upside down in space. And the Russians used a pencil, you know? So it's like, it was like that, just the difference in mentality from a Western perspective from what they were offering. And I guess Russia would be considered the East.
Maybe. Yeah.
Anyhow. Okay. Systemic inflammation. This is great. The SCANAR, you mentioned prolotherapy, PRP, stem cells, classical homeopathy, working with the localized inflammation in the joint. And when we got the systemic inflammation in the body, you know, it's going from head to toe, it robs the resources from what the joint needs to heal what's going on. There just isn't enough. It's like trying to bail out your bathtub while the flood is happening at the same time. What has been some of your experiences working with clients? What different joints, different situations or scenarios that come to mind that you'd like to talk about?
Well, it's the holistic health improvement approach. You know, patients start to lose some weight. They, you know, I'll add two other things that I think about a lot when I think about inflammation, right? Essential fatty acids. Like we have to have a good balance and ratio of omega-3 and omega-6. Both of those essential fatty acids feed inflammatory pathways. That 6 pathway is more inflammatory than the 3 pathway. And if we're disproportionately high in 6s and low in 3s, that in and of itself is going to just have us in a more inflamed state. So, you know, a fish oil supplementation is a pretty much unanimous across the board. And then as patients start eating better and don't have those blood sugar spikes, don't have those insulin spikes, inflammation lowers, and they stop storing things as weight. And that's taking pressure off the joints. And I've got a group of sisters that I'm working with right now. There are 4 of them. And, you know, weight motivated them wanting to get, because they've been yo-yo dieters and they've done it together their whole lives. And they just were like, we're ready to learn how to eat correctly. But they also were all limited in their physical capacities because of the excess weight and the chronic inflammation. And so right now it's just beautiful for him to come in and be like, oh, Dr. Swans, you know, when I get up out of the chair, I don't have to sit there for 30 seconds to let my knees kind of rebalance underneath me. Or if I start walking it, you know, I'm get these sharp pains or it's going to hurt. And, you know, they're being able to push the distance that they're walking outside a little further. They're starting to incorporate some exercises. You know, one of them, I just told her, I was like, you know, I think you should start dancing a little bit at home in the house to feel a little more invigorated and tap into your feminine energy and your sense of joy with the life. And she's able to do that because she's feeling so much better overall. And that's the goal, right? I mean, you know, I'm not a competitive athlete of any kind anymore. But I want to feel good day in and day out and be able to do the things that are important to me in my life. And so that's what I try to help patients figure out. Say, you know, like, what are your goals down the road and what sort of physicality do you need to have in your body to be able to do those things? And, you know, most people, it's not run a marathon or, again, play competitive sports. It's they want to be able to play with the grandkids and go on a vacation and hike around and look at the sights and, you know, not be limited or hold the other people they're with back. And I think that's possible for most of us, regardless of where we're starting from.
No, I agree. And what would you say is one of the biggest mistakes people make, your patients make, in terms of that sabotage, that process. They're starting to get improvement. I'm doing what you're saying, Dr. Schwanz, and I'm starting to feel better. And all of a sudden, it's like the next time you talk to them, and it's like they're in the weeds. I've fallen and I can't get up. Like, what do they do? What do you see?
Well, I'd say overall, my patients do really well with the process. And I think, you know, nutrition and diet temptations is where people often kind of, you know, we were at my cousin's wedding or my nephew's wedding, and I ate all this cake, and then I brought the leftovers home, and it's like a weekend, they're just completely falling off their nutrition plan wagon. You know, so for me, a really important piece is emphasizing to patients that this is a journey, and perseverance is more important than perfection. Mm-hmm. I don't eat the way I want to eat day in and day out, but I try to be mindful about when I'm making those decisions and how's it going to impact me tomorrow, and what's the thing, you know, that I have going on that I maybe don't want to eat that gluten today because I want my knees to feel good tomorrow. What I would say in general, what I see more like broadly in the people who don't work with me, is there's a lot of people who go around just kind of taste testing different approaches, and they, you know, they're gathering in some information, and then they're trying to do all of the work in the and support the transformation themselves. And I just don't think that's as effective as it is actually working with some outside resources, you know, building a health team that's supporting you, having people holding you accountable. You can try some acupuncture here, try an injection therapy there, work with a trainer or a PT. But it's really when you put everything together in a more comprehensive program and mindset, and you have the support, that's where people get the most lasting success. And I think through that experience of transforming their health in that holistic way, they're empowered in the future for when things start to feel like they're maybe sliding off a little bit, you know, I kind of know what I need to do to get back on track. And that's my goal. I want people to feel empowered in that way. That's not, none of us are going to do it perfect. But we can get where we want to be if we keep that, you know, view, we keep that in our sights, and just one step at a time, one day at a time.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's like my ability to, any time in my life that I've really been able to make significant change, has come as a result of working with someone else who's kind of coaching me through the process. Yeah. From your perspective, how would you build out that team? How would you begin? Like, who's the head coach? Who are the people that you're pulling into that team to be able to guide and direct you? Who, like, if you were to pull together a dream team, maybe 2, 3, 4, or 5 people.
Yeah. Yeah.
What would that look like?
I mean, you know, it would vary based on the individual, but ultimately I want the individual to feel like they're the coach or they're the quarterback, you know, that they're at the center of that team and that everybody else is there supporting them. You know, for me, I see myself as an integral player on a team for the patients that I work with, but I tell them, you know, I'm not going to dictate to you what you have to do. I'm going to tell you what I believe is going to help you. I'm going to support you in these naturopathic and homeopathic and the medical ways. And I support the patients with the coaching and the mentorship. But they also need to have a primary care physician. Even though that's my training, I'm not going to fill that role for them here. And we want to be able to have conversations with the doctor that's prescribing them their blood pressure medication or their cholesterol medication or their diabetes medication. Because as they improve their health holistically, their need for those pills is going to change. So I think everybody needs a primary care that they're comfortable comfortable working with, and they need a primary care that's comfortable with them working with other people. I think, you know, personal trainers, physical therapists can be really important. I'm not doing tons and tons of hand-on stuff in that sort of physical way. So the people that have aches and pains, you know, need to do that. I think a lot, I'll tell you one that's an interesting one, a dermatologist, right? Like skin stuff, a lot of people neglect it. And, you know, we just, I worry about moles and basal cell and stuff like that not being observed. I'm also a huge fan of the farmers markets. And I want people to think of their local farmers that are doing grass-fed beef and free-range poultry and eggs and locally grown, organic, minimally pesticide fruits and vegetables. You know, support those local resources and let those, be friends with them, so that when you come in there, they're like, hey, I set this aside for you. Right, you know, right. these are relationships we get to cultivate. And it feels good when we're doing that. And when we're feeling the progress and the improvements from that. And I think in a lot of ways, Bill, health is more contagious than disease, you know? So these people then who are transforming their health, they inspire their children, right? Mm-hmm. And this is a big thing that I do. I mean, I work with a lot of, you know, moms, wives, and for so long, they're sacrificing their needs to take care of the children and their husbands. And then they hit this place where they can't continue this way. And I just tell them, I'm like, this isn't selfish. This is a gift you're doing for yourself and for those people you love and have been taken care of, because you don't want your children to find themselves in the same situation.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, they say put your oxygen mask on first before you put on, you help someone else. And it just makes sense in life. And I believe people don't realize how much more they're going to have to give when they do take care of themselves first.
Right.
When they do take themselves into consideration first, then they're going to have way more to be able to share with their children, their partner, whoever it is, their family, their community. I think
and the cost of not taking care of ourselves, it impacts us directly in how we feel and lack of ability to enjoy life and feel vital, but it also impacts the community. It also impacts the immediate family, the community, the insurance system, the hospitals, the urgent cares. You know, we can do better, and we need to be responsible for ourselves in that way.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Peter, this has been fantastic. Enjoyed talking with you. It's been fun. Do you work with clients both in person, but do you also work with them remotely?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I work with patients. Yeah, I do. I do Zoom appointments, phone check-ins. You know, I have a few patients that over the past year, we've never met in person. And that's not a big deal. People around, you know, the Louisville kind of Midwest area. I mean, I have patients that travel a few hours to come see me in person. And it's great, but it's not necessary. We can still, you know, get moving in the direction we need without having to see each other directly. And I do a lot of education, stuff. I do stuff, you know, talks in my office, but I also do normally, two, sometimes three webinars a month that are free and just kind of talk about the process and what I'm trying to do to help people transform their health.
Nice. Well, how we have it set up here with the Camella Foundation, if it works, because some of the guests that we have don't actually work with people remotely. It's all in person. But if it is set up and you're capable of doing it, what we'll do is we'll put a button below where they can click a link and send you information directly from us, that they could schedule a time to work with you and would have that connection through the Camella Foundation.
That'd be great.
Great. Before we wrap it up, is there anything else you would like to share? Anything that's coming to mind, a little loose end that we didn't quite tie up nicely?
No, I mean, I think this has really been great. It's so good to see you, Bill, and to get to chat with you. And I think, you know, people are thinking more and more about their own health and their wellness and about the holistic stuff. And, you know, it's now's the perfect time to start implementing stuff. This is the youngest we're going to be right now. Yeah. And, you know, it's, I don't know why people put stuff off like this, other than as a species, we just tend to be comfortable in the status quo. You know, we're just, people are resistant to change, but you got to be able to look and say, hey, where I'm at's not working for me. Let's start doing something different.
Yeah. Great. Well, Peter, I want to thank you so much for being on the show, sharing your knowledge and wisdom with our listeners. We'll have the replay up for you to share with your friends, family, loved ones, your list, your people you work with.
Awesome.
Dr.
Swans.com, DrSwanz.
Thank you. I will have all of that in the description box with the link and all that to get in touch with you. I zoned out on that one.
Perfect.
Okay. This is Bill Paravano, the knee pain guru. Thanking you so much for being here and listening on the Pain Education Podcast, brought to you by the Camella Foundation. Thank you so much, and we'll see you on the next one.
Bye.
Thank you for tuning into this week's segment of the Pain Education Corner. Join us next week for another conversation on natural healing methods to eliminate pain. To learn more about the work we do at the Camella Foundation, please visit our website at CoMella Foundation.org.